Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm a longstanding journalist of the environment, food, health, policy, science, and the media. Each week on Connect the Dots, we connect the dots between different aspects of our interconnected world and how they affect each of us, our families, our work, our communities, our neighborhoods, our regions, our society, as well as planet Earth, the globe, the Earth where we all live and have our habitat, which, of course, as we've covered on the show for the last 9 years, is always at risk. And that's why one of the themes ongoing in every single show we ever do is about the need to be informed, active, and step up as citizens, you know, to look beyond the short sound bites to the deeper understanding of what's going on in the media and what's going on in our society and in our world. And so we cover different aspects of that with activists, thought leaders, journalists, scientists, doctors, authors, and, you know, many, many more kinds of people that each have a piece of this large interconnected puzzle that we live within. On today's show, we have a returning guest. She's been on the show, I guess it must be, this could be the third or fourth time, actually. And when we first began covering this issue through Lulu Friestadt, my guest today's incredible knowledge of this issue, very few people were interested in election integrity and how the vote was counted. That is, you know, is counted and what the results of that are. That topic has grown more and more of interest and gained in, it's always been important, but it's gained in notice in the public eye. So I'm so delighted that Lulu Friestadt is back with us today, and we're going to update an important series of happenings that have lessons for us all wherever we live, but in particular about initiatives going on in New York State, which is a major state with many electoral votes and a very key state upcoming in the 2020 election. Lulu is an Emmy Award-winning journalist and filmmaker whose election security investigations have received over 4 million views on Now This. They've been featured on Politico, MSN.com, The Young Turks, The Hollywood Reporter, Salon, Truthout, Alternet, and many, many more, including the Independent Voter Network. We'll talk a little bit more during the show about what some of her investigations have revealed, and, you know, some of them are probably worth revisiting a little. We're going to discuss, you know, what's going on right now, but also contextualize it within the history of Lulu's body of work investigating election integrity and what's going on in our elections. In addition to this important advocacy investigation, Lulu has also worked in broadcast television for over a decade. Her assignments coming from NBC, CBS, and ABC News. And her very first documentary, Hollerback, which we featured on past shows and which aired on public television, is also called, is also about voting in America, and its subtitle is Voting in an American Town, increasing importance to this issue. Welcome back to discuss it with us today and connect the dots. Welcome, Lulu Friestadt.
Allison, it's so great to be here with you. Thank you for having me.
So, you know, it's like I don't want to kind of jump back into history. I want to talk about what's going on first, what's urgent, what, you know, people need to know about and act on from your perspective. But then I'd also like to do, because I think it's highly relevant, so later on in the show, we're going to also do a flashback to some of your earlier work. In particular, we will revisit a little bit, and I hope you're prepared for this, the 2016 election, because, you know, everybody was hoping, you know, we could kind of just sort of leap past it and, you know, all be in a state of unity. I would say that's not happening. You know, there's some things there that are still kind of niggling in various directions. And, you know, you have some important insights as to what went on there because you've been looking at the vote, who instigated the vote, you know, what happened with the vote and other things. So we're going to do a flashback later on in the show, something to look forward to, listeners. But right now we're going to begin with, Lulu, with your current investigations into the type of voting machines that we need to have and the type of voting machines that if we don't take action, we may unfortunately wind up with in New York State. Fill us in.
Great. So I'm really going to focus us in here. We're going to go kind of in a deep dive, and we're going to talk about something called hybrid voting systems. And this is something that most people probably have not heard about, probably not on your radar unless you're really down in the weeds with this stuff like me. So let me just briefly explain, what is a hybrid voting system? Previously, with our voting systems, usually we've had, many of us are voting with paper ballots, where we hand mark those ballots ourselves and we feed them into a digital scanner. And then those voters who aren't able to mark their ballots themselves will generally use what's called a ballot marking device. And that's a device that has some sort of assistive technology. It can be sip and puff. It can have a little pad that voters can use. It can use audio. Sometimes it will have a larger screen that blows up text for people. Depending on their disability, that will help them to cast their vote. And then that ballot marking device will generally print out a ballot for the voter. And then that ballot can be taken and put through with all the other paper ballots into a scanner. So what I'm describing there is the system that we've had in place for years here in New York, and it is a separate ballot marking device and a separate scanner. And what happens is that the vendors have now combined that technology, and we have a machine now that one has been certified and one is up for certification, and these machines are called hybrid machines. And in the same way we think of hybrids in cars that, you know, combine a couple functions, like some electric, some gas, a hybrid voting machine combines functions. It combines all three of the functions that I just named, which is that it is a printer, a scanner, and a ballot marking device all in one. And the reason why I want you to really pay attention to this is to imagine this is a machine now, a computer, and it can select your candidates, print your candidates, and scan your candidates all in one place. In other words, it can basically vote for you. It can make all of those things happen, and if it is under the control of malware, that is exactly what it can do. It can vote for you. So, for example, it can take a paper ballot that you have voted on as a voter, that you've signed off on, you're done, you're finished, you made your decisions, you slide that into the scanner, you think you're finished, you voted. But because that scanner is also a printer, it can actually print an extra vote onto your paper ballot. So say that you voted for president, but you left Senate blank. It can sense that, if there's malware in the machine, and decide to fill in that Senate vote, or maybe it didn't like who you voted for president, and it decides to put a second vote for president and thereby disqualifying that vote and eradicating that vote. So this is very, very risky technology, and there are a number of computer experts that have come out now, election security experts, Professor Andrew Appel at Princeton, Professor Rich DeMillo at Georgia Tech, and both of them have said with absolutely no reservations whatsoever, they are very concerned about these machines. It is a very, very serious problem.
Oh, dear. That's terrible. Yeah, because they have all functions. They could just take over and do the whole thing, where before that wouldn't have been possible.
Exactly. We always know that the machines can be hacked, voting machines can be hacked. The thing that is so insidious about this technology is the particular type of hack is that it is changing the paper ballot. The paper ballot is the one thing that we have that we can use to check if the machines are counting incorrectly. Machines can make errors. We have had scanning machines that have errors up to 2.5%. One of the machines I investigated and that was decertified in Wisconsin had an error rate of 2.5%. That machine was decertified. How did they catch that? Because they looked at the paper ballots and they compared and they saw that the machine was not counting all of the votes on the paper ballots. But if the paper ballot has been compromised, now basically an election could be stolen without detection. There would be no way to find it. And so this new technology is completely compromising the audit process, and that is why our election security experts are so concerned about it, and that is why my project that I've been working on, and I want to tell you a little bit about that, has launched an action against hybrid voting machines as our first action. So let me tell you a little bit about what we've been up to.
Please.
The project is called Smart Elections. SMART is an acronym. It stands for Secure, Marked, and Audited by Hand, Accessible, and Accurate Registration for All Eligible Voters, and Transparent. And those are the basic protocols that we believe need to be in place in order for us to have smart, thoughtful, transparent elections, elections that we can trust and that we can all feel confident are a reflection of who we actually voted for. So the reason why I started this project is because what I noticed after about, how long have I been working in this space? About 11 years, I guess. My first thought came out in 2008. So after a decade in this space, what I realized is that there are a lot of very passionate and intense groups working in the election reform space, but they're working really in silos. There's a very passionate election security contingent. There's really powerful and motivated disability advocate community. There is a voting rights community that I think we hear about a lot with voter suppression, with gerrymandering, with voter ID. I think that voting rights community is very articulate, tends to get a lot of attention in the press. And there's also an anti-corruption movement that is really growing stronger and stronger. It has to do with getting money out of politics. And you see groups like Represent Us and Unrigged really bringing thousands and thousands of people together. So these are all very powerful movements, but in general, they tend to work in isolation, and there isn't a lot of connectivity between them. So the mission statement of Smart Elections is to coordinate and cooperate with a broad spectrum of election reform groups in order to elevate the issue of election reform as a national urgent priority.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our current project that I've been working on right now.
Yeah, that's very important because, I mean, one of the things, I mean, having reported on this repeatedly, and we've also had Greg Pallast on the show and covered his work and followed his work, and, you know, and that's really voter rights, you know, being knocked off the rolls, being gerrymandered
exactly.
off the rolls, and, you know, and people mixing
terms. Or gerrymandered where your vote doesn't. Yeah, or gerrymandered, like where your vote doesn't count. Like you might vote, but in a way that your vote is never meaningful.
Right. And, you know, if you're bumped off the rolls or if they, you know, close down the voting place or give it arcane hours or make it far from where you are, then you are denied the right to actually vote. And, you know, certain segments of the population, you know, it can be racist, very often is racist, you know, that governors in certain states have tried to eliminate portions of the population whose vote they don't want interfering with their game plan, you know, by bumping them from the rolls, you know, making all kinds of claims and everything. And Greg Pallast has done a fantastic job of documenting that. But one of the things that I've seen is, and when I talk about election integrity, you have voted. Is your vote counted properly? Is it accurate? Is there a way to double check it? What happens if the local board of elections carries off your votes against the law and, you know, shreds them? You know, you know, can they be recounted? How, you know, so here we are on national TV the night of an election with networks calling elections. And yet, you know, we have a very poor means to actually verify the results. And given, you know, the entire, the questions about the 2016 election, and you use terms like, you know, hacked or stole or interfered in the election, and yet there's never, you know, so this is all basically, we're not really, that was never really talking, we didn't have a palpable example and a kind of a line from any given party to an example of votes that were improperly counted or discarded. You know, we haven't followed through on that, but we use those terms, you know. So, in fact, you uncovered some votes, you know, some anomalies, some statistical anomalies with the 216 vote, but they've never been attributed to any party. So we've been kind of, you know, whether Russia, the Democrats, the Republicans, the people who own the voting machines, you know, the people in the district, or anywhere else. So we don't have, we have some evidence, but we don't have a smoking gun. We don't know who handled that, or, you know, if the anomaly was caused by something else. So, you know, on the one hand, we're all, you know, kind of, we have a global phrase such as Russia stole the election, but we're actually not tracking the integrity of our vote to assure that no one is able to manipulate it. And that's what you're talking about.
It is what I'm talking about. And I think what we're seeing really is an erosion of confidence. So if you look at studies that have come out now, so there was a study by the Associated Press in 2016, and it said that 9 in 10 Americans lack confidence in the country's political system. I mean, that's just huge. That is 90% lack confidence. So when we're looking at those kind of figures, and, you know, part of that is from all of this talk, and, you know, there is more and more talk. I saw an article in the Washington Post just today, and the headline was something about how maybe the Russians had actually tampered with the vote. You know, prior to this, everybody was saying, well, there was interference. That tends to be the word that we're using, interference. But over and over again, they'll say, well, you know, no one actually, you know, it didn't actually affect the vote. Now they're starting to say, well, maybe the vote count was affected, you know, in various ways. So I think, and that was certainly what I was concerned about when I was looking at the research in 2016. What I was seeing were strange statistical patterns, which I did report on, and I also actually did a public records request in 2016, which actually showed some sort of anomalies in the actual ballots. So I did, this was on Tim Canova's race in Florida in Broward County, and we actually had more than 1,000 vote discrepancy between the number of voters who voted and the number of cast ballots. That's highly unusual. I took that to different election experts, and they all said, that's shocking, that's bizarre, that shouldn't be happening. And then when we tried to do public records requests and actually look at those ballots, they destroyed the ballots. So there was apparently some sort of cover-up going on there, and I think it's unlikely we'll ever know exactly what happened in that particular election. But what all of these threads tend to do is they tend to all get bundled into a kind of anxiety and concern about the results of the election. And we all have these feelings of doubt and a lack of confidence in the results that undermines our democracy. When people do get elected, there's always this nagging fear. Well, is that really the person that had the most votes? And because of that, the person might not have the mandate that they would have. I think it creates a lot more tension. You see parties really going at each other as opposed to kind of gracefully saying, well, this is the mandate right now, or this is, you know, the direction that the country seems to want to move in. I think things are getting more and more contentious, and the lack of confidence in the elections definitely contributes to that. But what our project is focused on is how can we provide confidence? How can we counter that? And although there tends to be a narrative in the press that if we cover this type of thing, if we cover hacking, if we cover the problems with the elections, then people won't have confidence and they won't come out and vote. But in fact, what we find is that people want to talk about this, and they want it discussed, they want it aired. I saw there was one study that came out that showed that it actually increased people's confidence to discuss these things, because I think people feel that it is being addressed. If we're just brushing it under the carpet, then there is really no chance to solve it. We can't solve a problem that we can't talk about. So what our project is saying is, this is a problem. We have this security issue with this new emerging technology, the hybrid voting machines. It affects so many different levels. It's and there are four real segments that we're trying to work with in terms of election reform groups. That's the disability movement, the anti-corruption movement, the voting rights movement, and the election security movement. I named those previously. All of them are impacted by hybrid voting machines. So the disability community is being aggressively targeted with these hybrid voting machines. They need ballot marking devices, and so they're being told, these are the ballot marking devices that we have for you. This is what we want you to vote on, and because of that, they are advocating for everyone to vote on these systems, not just voters with disabilities. And this becomes actually something that affects all voters, because these machines are extremely expensive. When you count up all the costs, the maintenance, the storage, how many you have to buy, you have to buy a lot more of these machines than with the old type of system. These machines become 2 to 4 times as expensive as other machines. They can also cause long, long lines, because if you can imagine, you could have 20 voters filling out a paper ballot with a pen, and at the same time, if you have a machine and everyone has to vote on that touchscreen machine, only one voter could vote at a time. So you can imagine those lines get with these touchscreen machines.
That's the real problem.
Expensive equipment, long lines, a community that is really being targeted by the vendors. And you also have communities that really don't have the budget for this. Like we're looking at one county in Westchester. This is a county that is already in debt. Their bond rating was downgraded. And then here they're being asked to buy $6 million worth of voting equipment. They can't afford it. And most likely they don't need it. But this is very aggressive targeting by the voting machine vendors, trying to convince them that they do need these systems. And it could really start to cripple their economy. This is just, it's an expense they literally cannot afford.
That's intense.
So what we're trying
where can they afford it? You know, that's crazy. Wow.
Right. So what we're saying is the focus needs to be on boosting confidence. We need to coordinate all of these different reform groups to come together and to work on security protocols that do work for us, because these are issues that affect so many people across the board, and we want to boost the confidence and not continue to let it erode.
So what are the, where are these initiatives happening, and, are they happening in a few locations, or how can people find out and participate, what's going on in New York, specifically, and what's going on elsewhere?
Okay, so the hybrid voting systems, unfortunately, have spread rapidly across the country. They are already at use in 6 swing states. In Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. And they're also that's enough right there to determine the election. And then other states where they're using hybrids, California, Delaware, New Jersey, New Mexico, Kansas, Tennessee, Texas, and there is one hybrid that's already been certified here in New York. So let me lay out the scenario for the New York voters. And there's a reason why we're focusing on New York, not just because I live here, which I do, but we think there's a strategy to focusing on New York. So one hybrid machine has been certified in New York. It was certified last fall. It's called the Dominion ImageCast Evolution, or they call it the ICE machine for short. That's ImageCast Evolution, ICE, ICE. So that's the Dominion ICE machine. That's one hybrid. Then there's another hybrid by ESNS called the ExpressVote XL. That machine is probably worse. That one is a touchscreen that counts votes with barcodes. I don't think we got into the barcodes yet, so we'll talk about that in a minute. But so you've got the Dominion ICE, and you've got the ExpressVote XL. Dominion was certified in the fall, kind of quietly. No one really knew about it. And then the ExpressVote XL is coming up for certification. So the way these machines get certified in New York is by the State Board of Elections. And there's just 4 men on the New York State Board of Elections, 4 white elderly men. And they probably don't want to be, you hear me refer to them that way, but that's pretty much what they are. They are unelected. They are appointed by the governor, and they determine our voting systems, because it is up to them to either certify or not certify. So, and the process is really unfortunately designed. It is the vendors who choose which machines to ask for certification. So the whole process is pushed by the vendors. The vendors are pushing their most expensive systems. Those are the only ones that they want to sell to us here in New York. So these two companies have each put forward their most expensive system and are trying to get them certified. So as I said, one successfully was certified, one is in process. So at least the one that is in process, we, the group that that I co-founded, Smart Elections, is actively working to alert the commissioners to the problems with the machines and to try to keep it from being certified. And one of the main reasons that we're doing that is because we believe that that will throw that will send a strong signal to other states. If the Express Vote XL is refused certification here in New York, it's quite likely that New York media will cover that. Could be even an article in the New York Times or other. You know, we have so much major media centered here in New York. And if that machine is turned down, that is something that likely could get a fair amount of press. And we think it could slow the spread of hybrids to other states. Other states might think twice before certifying them. And so we are very interested in stopping the Express Vote XL from being certified here. On top of that being a national signal, it also will help us here in New York if we can stop that system, because that system in particular, the Express Vote XL, is a touchscreen machine. New York has never voted on touchscreen machines. From the very beginning when HABA was passed, there was a huge battle to keep touchscreen voting out of New York, and it was successful. And that is why we have had scanners, optical scanners, and hand-marked paper ballots all these years since about 2010, because, of, I mean, there were voting rights activists who literally fought tooth and nail for years to keep touchscreen voting out of New York. So the idea that it's just going to slide in now on, you know, this grease certification process, actually really frightening. But in addition to the touchscreen, the Express Vote XL counts your vote with a barcode. What that means is you vote, and then it prints out a sheet for you in text that tells you who you think you voted for, but it also prints a barcode that encodes your selections. And it is not the text that is counted. The machine counts the barcodes. So if you look at a barcode, I'm asking you, Allison, can you tell? Is that barcode a vote for Donald Trump or a vote for Elizabeth Warren? Do you have any way of knowing?
It doesn't sound like it.
How would you know? I mean, you can even take your smartphone and run your barcode reader over that and say, oh, yeah, it says, you know, that I voted for this candidate. But at the end of the day, the barcode is counted on the other end. It's not counted by your smartphone reader. It is counted by a barcode reader at the Board of Elections. If the barcode reader at the Board of Elections is hacked, and it could be, all of this equipment is computers. Computers can be hacked. Your barcode could be read for a different candidate. Say you wanted to vote for Elizabeth Warren, but actually it's read for Bernie Sanders, or it's read for Donald Trump and you wanted to vote for someone else. You know, a barcode reader can, here's a good way to think about it. You go into the grocery store and you buy a bottle of detergent and it has a barcode on it, and you go to the barcode and it scans that as $1.69. But then you go to another grocery store and you see, oh, actually that same bottle of detergent is on sale for $1.43, and you buy it there and it's the same barcode on it and they scan it at that grocery store and it reads $1.43. Well, why is that? Because their barcode readers are programmed to read the same barcode for a different thing. And that's the same thing that could happen with your vote. So that is the Express Vote XL. It counts votes with barcodes. It's a touchscreen machine. It is currently undergoing the certification process right now. So Smart Elections is organizing an action on Thursday, June 6th. So I think this is going to air on Wednesday, so that'll be tomorrow. And we are going to Albany, and people are welcome to join us. You can go to our website, smartelections.us, and sign up and come with us to Albany. We will meet with the Board of Election Commissioners face-to-face and say to them, we do not want to vote on hybrid voting machines. We want to be confident that our votes will count and that they will count as they were cast, and we do not want this machine certified. And furthermore, we want you to decertify the Dominion ICE that you already certified. And that is our message to the commissioners tomorrow, Thursday, June 6th.
And is there any way or anybody that people could call or, you know, any other place they could sign a petition short of you know, going to Albany, you know, tomorrow? Are there any other ways of expressing their wishes?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
And
so
what
we have a letter writing campaign up. The main thing right now is we have a letter writing campaign up. So if you go to our website again, that's smartelections.us, and you'll see on our top menu there's a selection and it says write against hybrids. And that's to send your letter, and this is a letter that you can send directly to the New York State Board of Election Commissioners and to Governor Cuomo, who appoints the commissioners and so, of course, has some influence with them. And we've given you the emails there, and literally it will take you 2 minutes. You can copy and paste that letter. We've laid out all the issues. You can send that to the commissioners. We'll ask you to send us a copy as well because we'll be printing these out and handing them a packet. And then there's a form that you can copy and paste the letter into to reach the governor. And it will literally take you 2 to 3 minutes at most. We have people timing it, how long it takes. And this is the time to make an impression. I have to emphasize this. Once this machine is certified, it will be really too late. It is really almost unheard of to go back and decertify a machine. You see we're having a tremendous amount of difficulty trying to get the Dominion ICE decertified. Now, before the Express Vote XL is certified here in New York, before you are voting on a touchscreen machine with a barcode, send a letter to the commissioners, send a letter to the governor, let them know you don't want this machine certified. Literally, today is the day to do this, please. Our website, again, it is smartelections.us, and you can copy and paste that letter there. It will take you 2 minutes.
Thank you so much. I mean, this is horrifying because what you're saying is that not only is this impacting the voters of New York State, but once this machine is certified there, here in our state, it will be adopted all over the place. And basically, it sounds like among, you know, a bunch of, you know, basically, as is typical in our society, you have an industry. It's the industry of people who make these election voting machines. For the sake of their own profit, they've made a complex machine that is way too pricey for many communities. They're kind of forcing it upon people, and it sort of has an increased risk of short-circuiting, you know, the reliability of the vote. So here we are, you know, heading in another year or so into, you know, one of the most important elections of all time in terms of not only the future of our own lives, the future of our society, you know, touching Earth as a democracy, and the future of the planet itself are all at stake in the upcoming election. And for the sake of profit, these election machine-producing companies, you know, have generated something that really short-circuits the process, that can't be checked. Election integrity goes out the window. And so, you know, one of the things that I have said over the last 2 years is that people who are so concerned, for example, that, you know, there was a possibility in their minds that may not, you know, it's never been actually shown or validated. We don't know any mechanism specifically by which this did or did not happen, you know, that Russia somehow tilted the election. But here we have created, in just going with what this technology has proposed across the country, a situation where anyone, we know not whom, could interfere in the outcome of the vote. This is, you know, horrifying. And one of the things I've said is, if you're concerned about the hacking of the elections, make sure you secure, you know, election integrity, which means that the vote gets properly counted and that there are means to double check it. How widespread, I mean, you've just mentioned that almost every key swing state that we have already has the less ideal, has hybrid machines, although not this even worse hybrid machine. So what does that mean?
No, these hybrid, when I say six swing states, they are using these two hybrid machines. That is between the Dominion ICE and the Express Vote XL, and there is one other hybrid that we believe has this capability to print fake votes onto paper ballots. It is called the Express Vote Hybrid. And between those three machines, those are the ones that are in the states that I mentioned. So, yes, it is these exact machines that are in those states.
So what does that actually mean, that right now the vote is going to be happening on those machines. I mean, in key swing states. I mean, talk about worrying about what the outcome of the vote will be and knowing whether we can, trust the election. What are the implications of that?
They are very scary, Allison. I don't know what to tell you except to say that they are very scary. And we are working daily to try to address these problems and to try to find solutions. Right now, the main thing that we're focused on is alerting the public. Once the public knows, we feel maybe they can go to their election officials and say, we don't want these machines. Maybe people can, some of them are being leased instead of purchased in those instances, mm-hmm. maybe they can send them back. What election security experts recommend, and I know I've said this on your show before, and I know you could probably say this in unison with me, but they want hand-marked paper ballots for anyone who is capable of hand-marking a paper ballot and a ballot-marking device for voters with disabilities who need some sort of assistant technology. And we want those hand-marked paper ballots put into a digital scanner, and then we want robust audits, either full hand count audits or risk limiting audits, to count and check that the digital scanners have in fact counted the ballots correctly. And that is how we would know that we have accurate results. And the more that we move to that process in as many communities as possible, the more we are going to be able to have confidence that our votes are accurate and to be able to, increase public confidence in the vote as well. I would encourage people to get involved with this. I will say, I'll just make a little plug here. You can make a donation to us. We have a small team and we're working really hard, sometimes 12, 16 hours a day, trying to get the word out about this. And it would certainly help us to be able to hire more staff and be more effective. And the main thing that we're trying to do right now, as I said at the beginning of the show, is really elevate the issue of election reform across the country so that we have this as an urgent national priority, something that candidates, before they get into office, are committed to taking a stand on. Wouldn't it be great if every candidate in the 2020 debate was asked, do you have a stand on election security? Do you have a position on election reform? What are the specific election reforms that you're going to implement? Will you support the PAVE Act? The PAVE Act is a piece of legislation that Senator Ron Wyden has put forward. It's a pretty good piece of legislation. It mandates hand-marked paper ballots. It mandates risk-limiting audits. I believe it prohibits hybrid voting machines. Right now, it's really just stuck in the Senate. It's, because the Republicans are there and nothing's happening with it. But if we have a national priority for election reform, we can start to move into a different space. What's happening right now is basically a repetition of what happened after HAVA around 2002, which was that wildly untested electronic voting equipment swept the country, was implemented, in state after state after state, and we wound up with years and years of elections that we actually had no way of verifying. And then there was a big push to move to paper ballots in the last, say 15 years, and then now that is being slowly unraveled, and this whole new generation of electronic equipment is coming out, and we're really having a Groundhog Day. We're really just repeating this over again. What we need is what I'm talking about. We need for election reform groups across the country to really come together and understand their power, and that as a unified community, we can move into a different space. We need a different paradigm where instead of talking about this, every 4 years when we're having a presidential election, we talk about this on a regular basis in between cycles. Our elections are in disrepair. What are the specific steps that we are taking locally and nationally to build a strong democratic process, to reinforce and bolster our electoral system? That is the kind of conversations that we need to be having, week after week, year after year, at the local, state, and federal level.
Definitely, definitely. Is there time for people in these different regions to undo what has been done? Like, you know, by what means can, for example, the people of Ohio, I'm just picking that out of the blue, is like a very well-known, you know, swing state that, you know, has been at issue with the determination of elections, you know, over and over and over. What can they do right now that this has been, you know, kind of landed on them? And most people probably don't even know about it. But if they did know about it, you know, or is there any recourse at the present time? Hating to ask this,
there is
but there
is always recourse. Elections are a very local issue. And the thing that has to happen, people, once they get informed, they have to get involved at a very local level. And what I try to say to people is, whatever issue you care about, and I know that, like, your listeners are very concerned about the environment and the climate and fracking and the, you know, the
agriculture,
treaties that
food,
we have going,
health care,
all
of that.
All of that. But spend a little time, take a little chunk of time and devote it to election security. It's actually, I think it's the number one issue. It's the issue that that all your other issues that you care about filter through. If the actual system of democracy is not working and is being some massaged or rigged in some way, then the things that you care about are not going to be decided in a fair fashion. And so take a little time away. I know these other issues are more sexy in a way. They're more they kind of make your heart pound. You're worried about the immigration and what's happening with the children. But take a little time. Connect with your local election officials. Connect with our organization. One of the things we're trying to do is to connect people with their local election officials and local security experts. Because often your election officials are getting their security information from the vendors. That is like going to Best Buy and asking them, gee, what equipment would you like me to purchase today? That is literally what is happening in, you know, in county after county across the country. Our election officials are rather blindly trusting vendors to tell them what systems to purchase. So we are trying to connect local citizens with their election officials, with local election security experts, and we have a regional partners all around the country. Please email us. It's contact@smartelections.us. Let us know where you're at. We'll try to partner you with a local group in your region. And together we can slowly make progress at improving our elections. That's what democracy is about. It's about getting in there and fighting the good fight.
Yeah. That's really that really makes a lot of sense. So, but that's actually hopeful, Lulu, in that, you know, you have these contacts. So, you know, this is not like a well-plowed territory where, you know, people would automatically know where to find this, or, you know, it might be hard to figure out. But through your many years now of networking with all of these different groups, you have identified the advisors of integrity in different states and, you know, throughout the United States. Is this, like, you know, kind of something that somebody could click online on your thing, or it's more like, you know, you can answer their questions, and if people donate money to you, then you can build out, you know, the online map that people can go to and reference all this stuff? I mean, how is that coming along?
We certainly would appreciate a donation. We certainly need it. Help from us is not contingent on making a donation. So we are trying to... Our website is a work in process, but we are literally trying to get regional partners listed. That is one of our next steps after the hybrid action, so that literally people can go online and go like, hey, I'm in Illinois. Indivisible Illinois is actually doing a lot of work with risk limiting audits. Let me get involved with them. Or I'm in Wisconsin. Wisconsin Election Integrity is a fantastic group that's doing citizen audits and has actually developed this wonderful auditing system with slideshow audits. Or I'm in Michigan, and the Michigan Election Reform Alliance is really powerful and is doing studies of what kind of ballot design is better for hand counting paper ballots. Like, there are groups all over the country that are doing really good work. And so one of the things that we are are in the process of doing is making it easy to connect with, you know, whatever group is in your, you know, wherever you are, connecting you with those groups.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent. That's really great. Yeah, good job. So that means, people, that, you know, you actually have a place to go. If this issue concerns you, you know, here's a resource. You don't have to figure it out for yourself. I mean, this is actually a terrific build-out, Lulu, from when we discussed this before, because, you know, I know in all of our past programs, and, you know, I've cautioned people and said, you know, figure it out in your state, get together with the local people. But then, you know, you almost have to be, you know, have the character of an organizer, which more and more of us need to become organizers. But you have actually proceeded to build out the information needed for organizing, and, you know, kudos for that, because that's actually a big deal. So, you know, people, if you're in New York, reach out to Lulu and her organization to sign the documents, to attend the events tomorrow. And if you're not, and whatever state you're in, especially if you're in one of these states where you're a swing state, and these, you know, machines without accountability, you know, are just being, you know, trundled into your state, you might want to do something about that. If you're in a state where I don't know what's going on in my state quite yet, you know, then you may want to find out and do something about it, because, you know, shut off the TV, let Mueller or the Democrats or whomever is going to take care of that or not do so, and actually get off up off your butt and take care of this. Otherwise, you know, frankly, all of this worry about somebody stealing the vote is happening. They're picking your pocket while you're looking in the other direction. Excuse me, that's my French.
I couldn't agree with you more. It's true. We are spending so much time looking back at 2016 that we are really, really missing the ball about what's happening ahead of us in 2020. So that actually is very true, and it is a real concern that I have. I want to pivot just for a minute, if you don't mind. I want to talk a little bit about voters with disabilities, because one of our missions is to really start to build connectivity, as I've said. And unfortunately, the security community, the election security community, and the disability community have really been working at odds for a long time. And it shows, because what happens is voters with disabilities do need various assistive devices. They need technology. In general, they have been more comfortable with touchscreen machines. And election security advocates are really against most of those systems, the touchscreen machines especially. And so what happens is the disability community advocates for a machine, and it gets certified, and then the security community comes in and goes, like, we hate that machine, it's a terrible machine. It creates a lot of tension between those two communities, and it doesn't actually help the process, because we keep sort of swinging back and forth on this pendulum. So what I realized is there really needs to be bridges built. And what I have done, from the very beginning with Smart Elections, is reached out and started to develop relationships. So, for example, we've done a three-part investigative report on these hybrid machines, and you can watch that on our website. It's smartelections.us, and part one and part two are up right now. And you'll see in part two, I went to a disability advocacy community, and I interviewed a number of voters with disabilities and talk to them about their priorities and what their concerns are. One of these machines, actually, the Dominion Ice, that community doesn't like either, and they were very outspoken against it. So that's very interesting. Even though the machine was designed for voters with disabilities, they didn't like it. But what was more important for me in terms of a learning experience was that I really started to listen to voters with disabilities and hear their needs, hear their rage about how their needs have been neglected. So even though we have the ADA, which is the legislation that mandates access for people with disabilities, oftentimes it isn't enforced. And in particular, what has happened with the voting equipment, although there is supposed to be a voting machine that is able to serve voters with disabilities in every polling station across the country. What these voters have found is that they show up at the polls and the systems literally are not maintained. They may be broken down. They may be in the corner, you know, just completely kaput. They may not even be turned on. And often the poll workers have not been trained in how to use them. And so voters with disabilities will be discouraged from trying to vote on that machine. They'll be told, oh, why don't you vote on this other machine? And one of the poll workers will help you. They'll fill out the ballot for you, which is not in many times what that voter wants. Often one of the main things that voters with disabilities are advocating for is a private voting experience. They want a private, independent, comfortable voting experience, and they deserve that. And so even though we do not believe that the machines that are being marketed for them are secure and they're not good, and we think that voters with disabilities deserve better, we also know that it is very, very important to keep advocating that voters with disabilities are respected and that their needs are met. And so one of the things that we are going to be saying to the Board of Elections on Thursday when we go is to say, we really want you to take a look at this. Here in New York, we have had disability advocates say to us that over and over again, even after lawsuits, even after years of working, for example, with the Board of Elections in Westchester County, those machines have not been maintained, not been turned on, poll workers aren't being trained, and they feel completely disrespected and that their needs aren't being met. And it is up to the New York State Board of Elections to do some kind of enforcement and to really make sure that these voters' needs are being respected. And that is actually more important than for us to buy millions and millions of dollars of dangerous, risky new equipment. What is important is that these voters with disabilities have what they need and that they're being treated respectfully and that their needs are being met.
That makes complete sense. In other words, they're doing overkill by giving these machines to everybody for no particular reason, without, for expediency or whatever, and yet they're not actually assuring that they are meeting the needs of those for whom they are indicated and were designed.
The only thing I would add to that is just that it is not for no particular reason. It's very important for all of us to make this connection, that the reason that voters with disabilities are demanding that everyone use the same equipment, and they are starting to say this mantra, separate is not equal, separate is not equal. And what that means in the disability community is we don't want to vote on a separate machine. We want everyone to vote on the same machine, which is that means that everyone has to vote like on a touchscreen ballot marking device. And the reason behind that is because their experience has been that when their machine is separate, then their machine is not maintained. And so if we can change that paradigm and really get in there and make sure that voters with disabilities machines are being maintained, then it would be possible for that community perhaps to feel comfortable with with some people voting on hand-marked paper ballots and some people who need them using ballot marking devices. But we really have to regain the trust of that community, which really that trust has been very, very badly frayed now.
I hear you. To use an analogy, it's like there are disability, elevators for accessibility in the New York subway system. There are far too few of them. They're only at certain stations. It makes it extremely difficult for people with disabilities to navigate, through and use the subway system, which is what everyone in New York uses. But, the solution would not be to shutter all the stairways and, to mean that everybody has to take an elevator, whether they need to or not. But to make sure that if the elevators, if that's the only way that the elevators would be properly maintained, which in fact they aren't in the New York subway system, then I can understand how that kind of demand could have arisen. So what you're doing is getting in the middle of the breach, and kind of negotiating around that, so that everyone's needs can be met, without creating a situation where there's a much higher percentage of people who are unnecessarily using machines that are vulnerable to, being hacked or changed, and even if they aren't, we have no way of really validating what was done upon them or with them.
Yes, yes, exactly. You get it. You've got it exactly. And furthermore, voters with disabilities deserve secure ballot marking devices. They deserve to know that their votes are going to be counted. And the term that I've been using for this is that no one wants democracy theater. That means that you go and you just feel good because you voted, but it doesn't actually do anything. It doesn't actually elect the candidate that you voted for. It doesn't actually, help to pass the referendum for clean elections that you wanted to pass, or the referendum for clean air or clean water that you wanted to pass. You just went and you felt good because you did your civic duty, but it's really just democracy theater, you know, because what we have is security theater, you know. The security is just an illusion. So what we're and voters with disabilities deserve something besides democracy theater. They deserve to have their votes counted also. And this idea that we can't make ballot marking devices that are secure is just absurd. We have to do better. And the voting machine vendors have shown time and time again that they're not committed to good security. And it's unfortunate, but we need to – this is like a whole nother ball of wax, and maybe we can just touch on this here at the end. So one of the other things that we
really
did –
But we don't really have time, We're really kind of coming down to the last couple of minutes. Okay.
Okay. This, the Election Assistance Commission is the organization that oversees all of this, and they are one of the main reasons that we have such bad vendors, because they are completely catering to the vendors. And you can also go to our website and send a letter to the Election Assistance Commission. The deadline is June 7th. You have until June 7th to do that, and again, it takes about 3 minutes. The template is there for you at smartelections.us.
Okay, that's great. So we have multiple actions we can do. Thank you, Lulu. We've been talking with Lulu Friestad of Smart Elections, about the real place where we need to focus our attention in order to have a secure vote, incredibly important given the upcoming elections that we're facing in another year or more. Thank you so much for being with us today on Connect the Dots, Lulu. I'm sure we'll have you back on again with your commentary and your investigations and your terrific advocacy work. New York State residents, I hope you will go immediately to smartelections.us and participate in the very timely action that we're talking about today. You've got today, you've got tomorrow. You've got, I think, one day more to contact the election boards we were talking about, and people listening from other states and other locales. You also have your work cut out for you. You can find out at smartelections.us what actions you can take to secure the elections and your vote and the vote of your neighbors, communities, and fellow state citizens through going to smartelections.us. Thanks so much for being with us today, Lulu, on Connect the Dots, and great success with your really, really important work. Let's defeat these machines and get machines that really work for people and not just the companies producing them.
Well, well.